Well, good morning. How are we doing this morning? Good. Full disclosure here. Thursday night, we had an event at our house. My middle child, Ezra, went to bed with a stomach ache. He woke up a few hours later in the bathroom. He was getting quite sick. And then last night, my oldest son, Judah, went to bed totally fine, woke up at midnight, didn't get to the bathroom in time. And on my way here, my wife texts me and said, Eli's down. So I've got a bug going around my house, so you may not want to shake my hand later, but I am grateful to be here, and I'm feeling fine, but also that's maybe a bit of a warning that if I run out in the middle of a sermon, it's not because I don't like you, and it's not because the sermon is going off the rails. So as Jesse talked about earlier, we are involved in a pulpit swap, and I am one of the pastors at Southgate in Kempville, and it is my honor and privilege to be with you here this morning. Our lead pastor, Ben, you're getting the substitute. Our lead pastor, Ben, is actually out with knee surgery. So he's going to be out for a couple of weeks here, and I will be filling in with his preaching responsibilities. So as Jesse said before, we are doing this as a network, and for those of you who maybe don't know, this is about the size of our network, and this is the Ottawa Valley X Network, and these are the trips that are being made this morning. These are all the different swaps that are happening today, and so we've got quite a few churches involved. You'll notice that there is a total of 1,981 kilometers traveled between all of us, and so we are just spending that time praying for our communities, praying for our network, praying for our area, that God would light a fire in our hearts and give us a passion to do what he is calling us to do. And so one last thing on the network, those of you who have met Dan Wallace from Cornerstone, anybody met Dan Wallace from Cornerstone? Yeah, there's a few of you. You know that he's got a personality. But one of the things that he insists on doing is taking a selfie everywhere he goes. And I see the heads nodding, and he has insisted and told me I could throw him under the bus, and that is exactly what I'm going to do. He has insisted that we take selfies at every church that we are at. So, that being said, everyone, smile for the camera. There we are, 11 o'clock, good to go. You're welcome, Dan. Phone can go away. All right. So we are in this series called Greater Things. And it's a series that we are doing as a network. And part of the reason that we are doing is we are hoping that this will be something that sparks something in anyone's heart to follow a calling that God might have on your life. To participate in, to potentially plant some kind of kingdom expression in the area. And so notice that we said a expression. We're not necessarily talking about just churches, but rather kingdom initiatives, things that are about the core kind of value is about reaching people and establishing God's kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. And so We want to encourage, we want to support, we want to train, and we want to resource you in that as a network. And so one of the things that we are doing is we are putting on a kind of one-day conference to explore some of these ideas, to explore what it means to have a calling on your life and to maybe tease out what it is that God might be calling you to do. And so our hope is that maybe throughout this series, you would sense a calling. And maybe you don't know exactly what that is. That's kind of what we want to walk alongside you with. And so we are kind of, we're putting together this conference. It's going to be held at Southgate, and we're really excited about it. But the idea, it comes from this passage, John 14:12. It says, "Very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I have been doing." This is Jesus talking. "And they will do even greater things than these." You will do the works that Jesus has been doing, but you'll do even greater things, he says, than these. Even greater things. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I hear greater things than Jesus did, I'm going, wait a minute. Like, could I walk on water? Could I just, like, come out and be like, you know what? I want a snowstorm today. I'm feeling like hibernating, so let's just have a massive snowstorm and I can just command the weather. Could I turn water into wine? Now that would be a lucrative business. Very little overhead. Kingdom expression. And while the very existence of an all-powerful God certainly makes all things possible, as we said earlier, don't hear me wrong here. I'm not trying to say that we aren't to lean into the miraculous, but I don't think that that is what Jesus has in mind in this particular passage. I don't believe that that is what he's trying to hint at. I know there goes my business plan for Kevin's miracle wine. I'm grieving it as much as you are. But what I would say is that this is trying to point to the very nature that Jesus' gospel hasn't been fully realized yet. And that he has actually entrusted us with the most important part of that mission. To go on and preach the gospel, to go on and communicate to others what is truly at work in the world. I believe that these are the greater things that he is calling us to. Now, who is he calling to it? Let's have a look at that passage again. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these. Now let's look at, you know, the Greek, and let's say, you know, what do we mean when we say whoever? We mean whoever. Whoever believes. Whoever believes. He is calling all of us. It is not about being a vocational pastor. It is not about being a missionary. It is all of us being called where we are and how we are. And so I look at this and I go, isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible that God, as we talked about earlier, he could just do the greater things. He can do it himself. He actually doesn't need me at all. He doesn't need me to accomplish anything at all. And yet, he has chosen to leave this particular work to you and I. He has invited us into the greater things that he is doing. He has said, listen, like, yeah, I could go ahead and do all of this if I wanted to, but I want to bring you in. I want you to be a part of it. It's incredible. And now, if you're anything like me, I'm going, okay, I can wrap my mind around a lot of this. Like, sure, God might be calling me to do greater things, and with him, it would be possible that I could do some of these greater things. But how does that actually all work out? Like, how do we jump from me today in the pew or the chair? How do we jump from that to greater things? Like, is this just like a go out and do it kind of sermon? Or is there something going on? Is there a process that God is inviting us to? Is there maybe more to this? And I think that asking that question, how does this get accomplished? It begins with where we started last week. And if you missed out on last week, essentially all of the churches were kind of rallying around this idea that the God that we all long to see makes himself known in the person of Jesus. That Jesus reveals who the Father is. And if Jesus has revealed the Father to us, this has massive implication, not just in the way that we view God, but it has massive implication for the way that we view ourselves. And so I want to take some time today to talk about this idea of the me that God longs to see. I want to talk about how we get invited into this process. Because the reality is that if we view God as being totally revealed in Jesus, it tells us that he loves us, that he is for us, and that he wants to redeem us. Hear me out. That word is very important. He wants to redeem us. He doesn't have to. He's not fulfilling some kind of obligation. He's not checking off a box and saying like, yep, redeemed them, did it. My work is done. He wants to. He longs to. And seeing God as he is revealed in Jesus allows us to see ourselves as he does. So we have to begin first with seeing God for who he is. Then we can truly see ourselves in the way that he does. And when I think about the me that God longs to see, I think of past, present, and future. The whole me. God longs to see a past version of me, he longs to see a present version of me, and he longs to see a future version of me. So let's talk about the past. And I really believe that when we talk about the past, I can't go back and change my past. There's nothing that I can do. But when I think about God loving and longing for the past version of me, I think of confession. And this is a practice that, in evangelicalism, we've often shifted away from because of some of maybe the more robotic religious activity that people have had. I go to confession, I do the thing, and I walk through the motions, but it doesn't really mean much to me. But we've lost the heart, the true heart of confession. Because the reality is confession is, it's not for God's benefit. I think about it as in my relationship with my kids. Like, I want my kids to confess to me when they have done something. When there is something that they wish they could hide, I want them to be able to confess it to me. Not for my benefit, Not because I'm super nosy, not because I want to be all up in their business. In fact, half the time, because my kids are young, I already know. I know what they've been doing. I know what they've been up to. I don't want them to confess for their benefit. For my benefit. I want them to confess for their benefit. For our relational benefit. And I really believe that this is why confession is important. Honesty with God, not necessarily for his sake, but for my sake and for the sake of our relationship. We try to hide the mistakes that we've made, the sins we've committed, the thoughts that we've had. And in doing this, we tell ourselves a story, both about ourselves and about God, that is not true. Hear me out. This story is not true. And the story that we tell ourselves is, if you knew who I really was, you wouldn't love me. Our inability to confess says this about ourselves. If you knew who I really was, you would not love me. And this is why confession is an important Christian practice. It lines our lives up with reality. This is who I really am. I'm not going to hide anymore. Because honestly, hiding is exhausting. It's very exhausting. I can tell you that as a parent of little kids who want to play hide and seek all the time. It's exhausting. And ultimately, confession is the means by which we tell ourselves a different story, a more truthful story. In spite of our flaws, missteps, and mistakes, we are deeply loved by God. When we enter into a life of confession, when we acknowledge the past me, we tell ourselves a greater story. We tell that lie a more true, a more real, and a more beautiful story. We tell that lie, God knows exactly who I am. God knows exactly who I am and loves me deeply. There was a Franciscan monk by the name, or not monk, he was a priest, by the name of Brennan Manning. And he wrote quite extensive literature on this because he was somebody who struggled with addiction his entire life. But he wrote extensively on the love that God has for him, and he was an open book. One of the things that he would frequently revisit is this statement, "My Father is very fond of me. He knows exactly who I am, and he is very fond of me." We will do greater things when we are able to accept the person that we have been. Being able to accept and confess our past opens up the door to God's love and character, changing our perspective of the present versions of ourselves. See, if we can't even accept the person that we've been, how are we ever going to accept the person that we are currently? Anybody reach perfection yet? No? Okay. We have to deal with a few skeletons in our closet, right? If we can't deal with the ones in the past, it's even harder to deal with the ones that we're currently dealing with. But I believe if we enter into that life of confession, we can move into the present with submission and gratitude. Submission and gratitude. If we are able to confess to ourselves and before God the people that we have been, then we can accept with submission and even gratitude the conditions we find ourselves in currently, the people that we currently are, perhaps even the work in progress that we are. And when we do this, it's almost as if we unlock like superpowers. I don't know about you guys, but I really enjoy like the superhero narrative. I like comic books. I like a lot of the, you know, comic book hero movies that are out there. But one of the common ways that we tell a superhero story is we've got like an origin tale. And in that origin tale, typically what's going on with a superhero is they've got this thing that is really obnoxious. It really interferes with their life. Like maybe they've got like super strength, and every time they go to like pat somebody on the back, they fly across the room. And like it's this stumbling block. It's something that's obnoxious in their life, and it's something that they feel that they need to hide. And what often happens in these origin stories is that these superheroes, they will learn to accept their power, to accept the thing that they thought was holding them back, and say, I'm going to use this as my superpower. When we learn to accept who we are exactly as we are, as a gift and with gratitude, all of the sudden, those things that were hindrances become our superpower. Have you ever experienced loss or pain? Are you maybe the person that you walk in the room and you feel like, oh, I'm just always, like, there's something going on, and it feels like every time there's a prayer request, my life is spinning upside down? Have you ever experienced loss or pain? Then you are uniquely gifted to walk alongside those who are suffering. That is your superpower. From an early age, I came into the reality that death was something that was right in front of me. My cousin died when he was 12 years old. And I experienced suffering at a very early age. I experienced loss at a very early age, but that became my superpower, because when people in my life started losing people that they loved, I knew how to walk alongside them, because I can always tell when somebody hasn't actually suffered, right? Like, I was walking with some friends who were going through the loss of a life, and we had another mutual friend who kind of came in. He's like, yeah, we got to put on a strong face. We got to make sure that we're not losing it. We got to make sure that, you know, we hold it together for them. And I was like, you've never suffered. The last thing you want when your world is spinning out of control is somebody to be like, I got it all together. I got it figured out. And that's okay, because that's not my friend's superpower. Right? The loss that I felt, the thing that I was angry about, the thing that hurt me, that's my superpower. That's the thing I'm called to do, to sit in the muck and go, hey, let's cry together. Let's break some stuff together. Let's figure it out together. Have you failed to measure up in certain areas of life? I can tell you that there have been some colossal failures in my life. Those have become my superpower. Because when somebody comes into my office and they say, Kevin, I'm really struggling. It feels like I'm just not good at this. I'm not doing this. There's all these things. And I'm like, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you about the guy who just couldn't hack it in this area, in this area, in this area, and how I felt, and how I thought it was the end. Have you been struggling with addiction? Let me tell you about the things that I was struggling with. Let me tell you about the things and the reason behind the reason. Let me tell you about how I walked through that. It becomes your superpower. And I really believe that this is what Paul meant when he said, give thanks in all circumstances. that we are to be grateful, that we are to have gratitude in all circumstances, for this is God's will of you in Christ Jesus. Because of who God is, because of who he has revealed himself to be, we are able to accept all of this. Yes, even with some gratitude. And that might take some time. I'm not expecting you today to like turn around and be like, oh, I'm happy about all of this. I actually had a different quote here, but I've been reading through this book with my kids, The Wing Feather Saga. Has anybody heard of this? No? They've been saying that this is a little bit like the new Chronicles of Narnia for this generation. And it's an incredible series. We just finished it last night. We just finished it. And let me tell you, my kids saw their dad weep over, like, reading a book with them. And I think that was amazing. By the way, another thing that I thought I needed to hide was my emotions as a child. I cried a lot. It's my superpower. I'm teaching my kids to work through their emotions, to actually express them. Anyways, sorry. We've been reading the Wing Feather Saga with my kids. And just to kind of set the stage, I'm going to quote a little bit from this. In the Wing Feather Saga, we're following three children who are the heirs to the kingdom of Anira. In Anira, they have a particular line of succession. In which the secondborn is the true heir to the throne. The secondborn is the true heir to the throne. And the role of the older brother in this story is to protect the younger from any harm. And he's called the throne warden. In the Wing Feathers saga, we're primarily hearing the inner thoughts of the older brother, Janner, as he kind of begrudgingly follows the call on his life to protect his two younger siblings. And at this point in the story, the younger brother, Kalmer, has been invited into the presence of the kind of like deity of this story. And they're simply referred to as the Maker. Meanwhile, Janner has to sit and wait for his brother to return. And in his waiting and complaining, he hears a mysterious voice. I wrote this down. You can follow along, but I noticed in first service there were a couple of spelling mistakes, so I'm going to read from the book. So he hears this mysterious voice. "Be still." "What?" Janner said aloud, looking around for the owner of the voice. Someone had spoken, but whom? When he tried to remember what the voice sounded like, its quality vanished from memory. Then he realized that, of course, the one who had spoken had also made the world. And Janner trembled. "Be still." "Yes, sir," Janner whispered. He knew the voice, and he had always known it. It seemed to come from the fane, but also from the floor where he sat and from the sky and the water and the wind and the blood in his veins and the air in his lungs. His heart swelled and something like a shout rose from his throat, but it came out as a whimper. "Be still." "Yes, sir," Janner repeated. He was now crying. He felt in his heart a braid of pain and delight and longing that made his bones burn and his heart quake. All his attention turned from himself, and he yearned for the speaker of those words so desperately that he wished he could die and be born again as a single spoken syllable from his mouth, just to know the pleasure of his presence. He vividly sensed Lily's sweet, gentle breathing and the music that wreathed her dear heart. He saw Kalmer's woundedness and ached to embrace the boy in the wolf. He even saw his own troubled, selfish soul, the scarred flesh and the weary eyes. and conflicted emotions. He loved the Janner he saw through the Maker's eyes. He knew himself as he was known. He saw and he was still. A great love enveloped him, and he thought of his father's bear-like, he thought of his father's bear-like embrace. Only now he knew that those arms were but a shadow of the bright love that beat the world's heart and held him now, as it always had, with an inescapable, indescribable tenderness. Be still. The voice repeated the words again and again, like a beating heart, until Janner was able to obey and to rest, rest, rest. There, in the light of the fane of fire, Janner Wingfeather encountered, absorbed, an abiding peace that he would never forget all the days of his life. He was still, and he was loved. I don't want to spoil the story, but Janner would go on to do greater things because he walked in this reality. He walked in this new reality. And just as a personal testimony, I experienced this a couple years ago. Some of you may know me from like Silver Lake or from some other district things, but if you've seen me around, you maybe don't recognize me as much. In fact, this is what I looked like a few years ago. I was 70 pounds heavier. Through a series of events, I came to a place in my life where I realized I had been mostly living out of a place of dissatisfaction and want, and leading me down a path to my own destruction. I was still trying to adjust to so many changes in my life, biggest one being fatherhood. And it all felt like it was out of my control. So I felt like I was going to take control in one area. Food. If I couldn't get what I wanted, when I wanted, out of anything else in life, I was going to get it out of food. I did just that. I ate what I wanted, when I wanted it. And ironically, in taking control in this area of my life, I was losing it. I was losing control. It wasn't until a series of events namely, some events that really showed me how deeply I was loved. Caused me to pause and ask myself some questions about life. And I realized that although there were things about my circumstances I wished weren't true, there are still things about my circumstance I wish were not true. I have a lot to be grateful for. Namely, that I am truly known and I am truly loved. I even got to a place where I was able to be grateful for the things that I disliked. I saw them as my superpowers. Not that I started to like them, just that I could see how those things could be redeemed. I accepted my life, the good, the bad, understanding that my areas of strength and my areas of weakness, and I was able to be grateful for those things. In fact, I just had a meeting with my young adults the other night, and I sat down with them and I said, listen, guys, I have done some soul searching, and I realize that I am very, very bad at this part of my job, and I need your help. It was a very difficult thing for me to do. What are they going to think? Is somebody going to complain to the board? Is somebody going to do all this? Is somebody going to be like, oh, that guy doesn't want to do his job, blah, 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 all these things. But all of a sudden, in opening up my weakness, I was able to invite some people in. It became my superpower. Now I can empower some people around me. And I'm looking forward to what God does through all of this. Physically, it's easy to see the change in my life. But I bring this up because it's not just physical change that happened to me. That is one manifestation of what has gone on in my life. But there are significant things that have happened to me spiritually as well. The wonderful irony about all of this is that the thing that I needed for transformation in my life was the ability to love and accept where I was. What I needed to change and move forward was to be okay where I was. And I believe that this is what the gospel gives us, knowing who Jesus is, knowing that he reveals the Father to us, that he has always loved us, opens this world up to us. And so imagine for a moment, as we look at the future, imagine that transformation. Right? I can't tell you what that's going to be in your life. I can't even tell you what that's going to be in my life. That's why this is the shortest section. We're almost there. So imagine for a moment, and hopefully without moving to a place of dissatisfaction. That's the tricky balance we've got to find here. It's being able to see what God is calling us into without being dissatisfied with where we are. What kind of transformation could you experience if you weren't hindered by those feelings of guilt, shame, and discontentment? If we actually saw ourselves as God sees us. He sees all of us in exactly where we are and loves us all. I believe that this is what Jesus is getting at when he says in John 14:11-12, believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. When you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. Very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I have been doing. And they will do even greater things than these. And we skip down to verses 20 and 21. On that day, you will realize that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I am in you. Whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me. The one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love them and show myself to them. Wow. It's like this tongue twister, but it's this beautiful storm of everything coming together. It's a massive intertwining of realities. To know Jesus is to know the Father. To know the Father is to understand that you are loved. And to understand that you are loved comes with the radical implication that transformation is possible. That transformation is possible. And so when you hear this idea of being called to something, and you hear this idea of greater things, I want you to take a second and pause and don't just jump to that thing and say, not me. Because that's not how the Father sees you. I'm going to invite the team to come back up as we respond in worship. And lastly, I want to invite you, as we will be doing throughout this series, I want to invite you to come to this conference. If there is something that God is laying on your heart, if there is something that you feel called to, if there is that version of you that you see doing some kind of kingdom initiative, doing something, and maybe you don't know what it is yet. That's the whole point of what we're going to be doing at this conference, is talking about the call itself. And so I'd like you to consider joining us. This is something free that we are doing. We simply, as I said before, we want to see God work because we really believe that this is powerful stuff. This is transformational stuff. And we want to see more of it in our neighborhood. And so we're inviting you, and I hope to see some of you at this conference. I hope that we can be working down the road on some kingdom initiatives together, all seeing ourselves the way that God sees us, beloved children. The Father is very fond of you. If you take nothing else away from today, I hope you take that. And so, God, I thank you for the opportunity to be here. I thank you for your gospel. I thank you for the good news that you have revealed Jesus. Sorry, you have revealed the Father to us through the person of Jesus, sacrificing yourself on the cross for us. You have shown us that we are deeply loved. I pray, God, that that love, accepting that love, past, present, and future, God, I pray that our acceptance of that love would transform us into the people that you have called us to be. And I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.